We've been in a message series called Sharing Jesus Stories. And throughout this message series, we've looked at a couple of different things. The first thing that we really considered when it comes to like our local mission and evangelism is that internalizing Jesus stories is really, it's our toolkit for discipleship and evangelism. It's what the early church used and had in their tool belt to go out and spread the word and the message of Jesus. And so likewise, it is also what we have or what we should reclaim or recover or refocus on in our going out to share stories about Jesus. In that first week, we also considered how the early church practiced ministering to one another within their gatherings so that they could then go and minister to others outside of their gatherings, that the early church had a participatory framework, if you will, within their church worship and their church gatherings. So we're going to practice some of that today in a little bit. Then the second week, we moved on to look at Paul, and we saw how Paul's primary focus when he went to evangelize or take the message to the church in Corinth was specifically and almost exclusively the stories about Jesus and these stories Jesus told. And then Paul really talked a lot about how these stories are what contained power or the power of God, and that these simple stories, if you will, hold the power punch, if you will. And then as we continued looking at Paul, we considered a bunch of his weaknesses that we kind of aligned with, and we concluded that there's quite a few weaknesses when it comes to taking the message out that we do not need to carry. And does anybody remember the phrase? And we still say it like robots. It's fantastic. That's what happens when we say things together as a large group. Yeah. But really, we considered how, for Paul and even for ourselves, that his power, that God's power, it overwhelms our weaknesses when we share Jesus' stories. And then last week, we looked at a conversation that Jesus had with a Samaritan woman or the woman at the well. And in that conversation, we considered a framework that we would have for our own conversations when we begin sharing Jesus' stories. And that framework was name, life, limits, stories, and specifics. And as people invite us into like the next level of this framework, as we move past just getting to know one another's names to small talk about life, to maybe talking about limits or hardships or struggles or ceilings that we face in life, at that point we are invited to begin sharing stories with one another. And typically we'll hear how some people's hardships have come about, and then we also have opportunity to share some of our own stories and resonate, if you will, with their hardships and limitations and sharing some of our own struggles and hardships and limitations. And then through that process, the stories of Jesus will be able to naturally come forward and be shared within that process. And then after we do all those things, then we can look at moving towards things like specifics, like really asking specific questions about people's discipleship or about people's life or their faithfulness to Jesus, etc. And so we considered that framework. And as we saw Jesus moving the woman through this framework, we saw really how what opened in like hostility towards Jesus then shifted to just being curious or respectful about Jesus to being a little bit more committed, and then to the end of the conversation, a loyalty that developed towards Jesus. And so I think that as we use this conversation pathway, we can see things move along the same pathway. This morning, I before we share in discussion, I would like to offer a story to us. And the story is about when Jesus is asked a question and then a discussion is sparked. And if you prefer to read along in the story, you can find it in John chapter 9. But when Jesus is asked this question, his disciples notice something. They notice a person, and Jesus is asked, who sinned for this to happen, or who sinned for this man to be born blind? Was it him or was it his parents? So Jesus is traveling with his disciples. There's a blind man from birth, and the disciples ask what they assume to be a very perceptive and almost standard question. Who sinned that this man would be born blind, him or his parents? I'm not sure how you interact with that statement. I just find it highly interesting that this man was able to sin in the womb before he was born, based upon the way that this question is constructed. I just find that highly intriguing and interesting, and probably not worth going down a whole theological rabbit trail on that, but I find that to be interesting. Well, as Jesus fields this question or begins to discuss and interact, he says, well, actually, neither. But at the moment, this man who is blind, you are going to be able to see the power and the glory of God at work in and through this man. And so what Jesus then proceeds to do is something that would probably be very natural to all of us. We would spit on the dirt in the ground, and then we would put a lot of spit for that dirt to actually become like a mud paste. And then we would pick up that mud paste and we would smear it over a stranger's eyes. And then we would say, your task is almost done, except now you need to go find the pool in Siloam and go ahead and wash there. And I also find that to be highly ironic that Jesus is telling a blind person to go find a pool. Like when we think about what's happening here, it's like, what is going on with this? What is going on? And so somehow this man ends up finding this pool. I don't know if he found it himself. I'm assuming that this man had a guide or guides that were with him often. I don't know. Some of this is just assumptions. But the man finds his way to this pool called Siloam, which means commissioned or sent. So Jesus sent him to this pool. He washes, and then he recovers his sight. He's no longer blind. He is healed from his blindness that he has had from birth. And so then there's these other characters in the story. They're Pharisees. And these Pharisees catch wind of Jesus healing this blind man, but it happens to be on a particular day called a Sabbath. And on that particular day, the Pharisees held very strictly that you could do, like, no work. You could do no work on the Sabbath. So if you have thoughts of, if you consider a specific day a Sabbath, if you have thoughts of spitting into the dirt and making mud paste and then smearing it on somebody's eyes so they can see, the Pharisees would really want you to reconsider what you're about to do. And so they're upset. They're a little frustrated with this. So then they call into question this man. But they also aren't quite sure if they really believe that this man was actually blind from birth. And so in addition to calling in this man, they call in his parents, and they call them into the synagogue or the church building, if you will, and they begin to question him, and he begins to respond. And the first question they want to know is, like, have you really been blind from birth? And they ask the parents, and the parents say, he's above 18. Ask him for himself. And they said this because they already knew the Pharisees wanted to kick out anybody who was partial or allegiant or compassionate or interested really in Jesus. So they want no part in it. So this poor blind man gets called into this church meeting and his parents are brought in and they ask the parents a simple question like, has he really been born from blind? And mom and dad don't want to say. It's like, are you kidding me right now? Mom and dad, for real, this is how it is? And so then they begin to question him, and he says, you know, who did this to you? He's like, this man named Jesus. And then they're like, well, what do you think about him? He's like, well, he must be a prophet. And then he goes on to say something that most of us are probably familiar with. Well, there's one thing that I do know. I was blind, now I see. I was blind, but now I see. And so the Pharisees are still not quite convinced. And so then they seem to re-ask the same question. They want to know more about what they've already heard. And then this blind man who was blind before, he now sees, he says, did you not, like, you didn't hear me the first time? No, I get it. You guys really want to be his disciples too, don't you? That's why you're asking me a second time about everything I had just told you. Well, the Pharisees go from like kind of mad and upset to like outraged. And they kick this man basically out of the church or out of the synagogue, out of the assembly. They outcast him. They send him to the side. So he's out. Jesus catches wind of what happens. Jesus catches wind of this man being put out, and Jesus goes and finds him again. And when he finds this man, he asks him this question. Do you believe in the Son of God or in the Son of Man? And this man's response is, who is he? Tell me so that I may believe. And Jesus' response is, I, the one speaking to you, I am he. And then this man fell down, bowed down, and worshiped Jesus in that moment. And I find it highly interesting how there's two different encounters. The Samaritan woman, the woman at the well, she encounters Jesus. She goes and she shares her story. And as she goes and shares her story, people are drawn to Jesus. And eventually, the town of Sychar comes out to meet Jesus. And then we have this story where this blind man has an encounter with Jesus, and then he's questioned and he's asked about his story. And as he's sharing his story, he just continues to meet opposition after opposition. And he doesn't even seem as though he's fully committed himself to Jesus yet. He's just saying, well, he must be a prophet, but I know this. I was blind and now I see. And for his just small defense, if we will consider it that, of Jesus, he gets thrown out of the synagogue, or what we would consider to be thrown out of the church. And so in one instance, when people go out sharing stories of Jesus, towns come, people come to see him. In another instance, when this individual is recounting his story with Jesus, he encounters opposition, and then eventually he is outcast, or put out of the assembly would be the specific Greek construction. And so as we share stories of Jesus, there will be times and moments where there are groups of people that will want to come and see and meet Jesus. There will also be times and moments where we share a story with Jesus and they begin to become compassionate to them, and we'll begin to see something happen. Their social circle will begin to push them away. And then they'll be in this space, just like this man was, wandering out without a group, without friends, without this social circle. And that's where we will have an incredible opportunity to welcome them into the family of God in the way that I'm assuming and hoping that most of us were welcomed into when we either made that commitment, or some of us have been in this family of God since we were born, and we were born and raised in the faith and in the way, and it's such a glorious thing. But not everybody will have that opportunity, and statistically, many in our community and in our time and day and era do not have that opportunity. They were not born within the church community. They were not raised within a community of faith. And instead, it's towards us to begin sharing these stories of Jesus, to begin providing opportunities and to welcome them into the family of God. And so as we go out sharing the stories of Jesus, stories about him, the stories that he told, God's power will be with us. Now, God's power may look like spitting in mud and then rubbing it on somebody's, like, it's crazy if you ask me. I would need to like quadruple check to assume like that's like some pretty specific instruction that I'd quite honestly be very nervous and afraid to do. And so there's that, but then there's also the woman who just had a simple conversation with Jesus, and a couple of things were revealed, and as conversation continued, she was drawn to him. So it may come with works of power in a sense of physical healings or signs and wonders, or it may come similar to the conversation with the woman, where the power of God is that internal conviction of the Holy Spirit to bring us to recognize and see Jesus. It may be either one. So no matter if we see towns and people come, or if we see individuals being outcast and put aside from their prior social circle, no matter if we experience a harvest, or if we only do the hard work of sowing or going out and spreading the word without seeing the joy of people coming, if we recall the words from last week, the one who sows and the one who reaps, they can be joyful together, knowing that their work is contributing into the kingdom of God. And so as we consider this, I want to share just one more observation about an individual within the story of Jesus who went out and shared this message without doing signs or wonders. Or in other words, would be much more similar to what I have really even experienced in my own life. I'm just somebody who shares a story and then God does his work. It'd be a good old Johnny B. Does anybody know who Johnny B would be? John the Baptist, absolutely. And so Jesus went back across to the Jordan place where John had been baptizing in the early days. And there he stayed, and many people came to him, and they said this, though John never performed a sign, all that John said about this man was true. And in that place, many believed Jesus. As we share these stories, you and I may never personally perform a sign or a wonder or a miracle. We may never see that in that way happen, and that's completely okay. Neither did John the Baptist, who I think all of us would agree was a pretty big deal and pretty big forerunner to the ministry and entrance of Jesus into the world. And in a similar way, we can take on that role and we can share these stories and we can prepare the way for Jesus to show up in people's lives, prepare the way for Jesus to show up in their world, prepare them to be able to see and recognize Jesus and his workings when he does show up. So let's do that. Sharing the stories of Jesus, let's prepare the way for people to see the resurrected, risen Savior and Lord and Master and King of this world, Jesus. And so I mentioned the early church practiced with one another within so they could go and minister to one another without. And of course, did it rain while we were in here? Because it started raining earlier. Did it rain this morning? Think so? We don't know. Okay, well, we're in here anyways. Doesn't matter. We were supposed to have lawn chairs and circle up. This is the second time this summer this happened. Of course, we can't pick up these pews and circle. So we'll need to make some groups of maybe five or eight or so. And in our groups, I'm asking that we do a couple of things. One would be this. If you came this morning and you have a specific story to share with somebody, this is going to be a space where we're going to practice retelling these stories. So that whole framework of name, life, limit, story, specifics, let me back up for a moment. If you don't know somebody's name, when you get into a group of five or eight, this is the opportunity to learn their name. Just say, hey, my name is, I'm sorry, I should know your name. I don't, I'm so sorry. Please remind me your name. That would be the first opportunity. Small talk about life and hardships. We're skipping those steps in that conversation pathway because we want to practice sharing some stories. So if you came in prepared to share a story, I'm going to ask that you not tell them what your story is. I want us to share the story as if we're just trying to reveal it to somebody for the first time. So we're not trying to jog people's memories by saying, do you remember the story XYZ? Instead, just start into the story, there was a time when Jesus XYZ. Does that make sense? And the difference about telling somebody about a story versus like retelling the story in general? Okay. Some of you may not have a story that you came like with a specific point to share, but you may have like a favorite story or saying of Jesus, maybe a favorite story or maybe a favorite parable or just a favorite teaching of his. This would be an opportunity to retell that from memory. Now, please, some of us will feel uncomfortable with this. We are not looking to quote back what is written on a page. We are looking to say back what is internalized inside of us. Does that make sense? Yep. Okay. Now, maybe you came here this morning and you're like, well, this is weird because I didn't have anything prepared, and I don't even know if I have a favorite story about Jesus. There is good news for that as well. The good news is that your role then is just to participate. Your role is to participate in the discussion. Hear the stories, and then after the stories, take 2 or 3 minutes to just discuss the stories together. And these questions can be basically, what stood out to you, or what do you sense that Jesus might be saying from the story that you just heard? And then you'll discuss that as a group. So that is the framework. The time right now, I can't read that small green clock. The time right now is 9:40. So we're going to take about 20 minutes to do this for our discussion time. So we'll come back together shortly after 10 o'clock, and I'll leave these prompts on the screen, but let's go ahead and find ourselves into groups of 5 or 8, and then we'll begin sharing a couple of stories with one another. All right, very good, very good. Is there a volunteer in the room who would like to share a story from their group? Steve, absolutely.
So my name's Steve Hebert, and I was an engineer who had to do communications and had all these important visitors who would come see me. So we used to have to get presentations ready, and so we always had to be ready because we didn't know if we had an hour or we had months before somebody was going to show up. Well, Jesus told the story of these 10 women who were getting ready for the bridegroom to come. They all had to get all their preparations together, and they all went out with their lamps to go meet the bridegroom because they didn't know who he was. They were out there waiting, and it started getting late, and their lamps started to dim. And so they all started to get ready. They were trimming their wicks, getting ready. And some of them had remembered to bring oil. They refilled their lamps, and they were all ready to go. The others said, please share with us your oil. And they were like, we don't have enough. We just have ours. So go buy your own. Well, while they were going, the people went, and here comes the bridegroom. The five who were ready went with Jesus into the festival. Those who weren't ready, they got locked out. And so the question is, are we ready? Do we have preparations? And as we discussed, you know, it's not do I have physical things, it's do I have a personal relationship? Because I can't save my kids. I can't save my grandkids. I can only have my faith that lets me know the bridegroom. Those who don't know the bridegroom, they're not coming in. Do we know the bridegroom? Are we ready? You know, because we don't know what hour he's going to come. It could be today. It could be years from now. But are we ready? So.
Yeah. And Steve, when you shared that with your group, what were some of the thoughts that the group had to add or discuss with that?
So we were talking about, you know, the first thing was, why didn't they share what they had? You know, but if you think about it as terms of a personal faith, can you share your personal faith such that they personally believe? No, I can tell you my faith. I can tell you my story. But you have to have your own supplies. You have to have your own faith. And that was one of the discussions we had of, can I share what I have? And the answer is, no, you can't. You have to personally know Jesus to get in. And the other part of it was, do you know Jesus? You know, they didn't know what the bridegroom looked like. They were waiting for somebody to introduce him so that they could go into the party. Well, they weren't ready. Those who were ready got to meet the bridegroom and went in. Those who weren't ready didn't.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I've never quite thought through the story in that framework of like, we can't share what we have. Because as I've always heard the story, I guess I've always wondered like, well, they can clearly share. Like, can't anybody just at least give a little bit? Like, we can't get by together as a group, but that's a fascinating insight there.
Yeah, you can tell your kids, but you can't save your kids.
Yeah.
All you can do is get them ready so they go to the merchant, buy their own things, and come with you and are standing there ready with their lamps lit too.
And then the second part, if I was hearing correctly, you were saying like they probably did not know what the bridegroom looked like. And so they'd heard that this time was coming, and they should be prepared and they should be ready. So they've heard some things about this person, but they haven't met this person yet. But there's something about being prepared so that when the person shows up, then you can see and recognize and enter into the joy and the celebration. Is that the other
part? Right.
Other
and part? It's, you know, like the kids at VBS. They've heard the Jesus stories. They know the Jesus stories. So they're getting ready to know Jesus.
Yeah.
But they haven't met him yet.
Yeah.
Somebody who's leading the bridal procession says, here's the bridegroom. And they introduce him. Now they can have a personal relationship because they were there ready and open.
Yeah, fascinating. Yeah, sounds, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, thank you for sharing, Steve. Thank you. One more. I think we have time for one more. Is there another volunteer in the room who would like to share one of the stories from their group? Oh, I see some finger pointing up into the balcony. Oh, I'm coming up into the balcony. All right. Cal, who you pointing at? All right. Who did Cal volunteer? Zane? Oh, well, now we're up here, and now we got a microphone up here. So everybody is looking this way. Who wants to have a conversation with me? Oh, even the parents are pointing to Zane. Zane, this is like the story that we already talked about. The parents came into the space and said, we don't know. He's old enough. So, all right, here you go. Zane, what was one of the stories that you guys, you're just talking with me. Don't worry about everybody else. Well, what was one of the stories that you guys?
Well, gosh, really thrown into this real fast. Mine wasn't more of a story. It was just more of a point. One of my favorite parts about Jesus and just what he's done is he accepted everyone. He didn't say you couldn't be a part of the church because you did this or you did this in your past. He said, yes, I know you did this, but you can still be a part of this. Mm-hmm. So that was just one of our main discussion points here.
Awesome. And there's a gentleman named Jeff in a blue shirt down there who actually shared me a story that really lines up with what you just said, Zane. So Jeff, we're coming down. We're going to finish with you. All right, Jeff, you ready to share your story? He's like staring straight forward like, my name's not Jeff. Your story that you shared with me aligned with what their conversation was up there.
I'm looking for a blue shirt. I mean.
It's blue-gray. Forgive the color blindness here.
Wow. I love it. My story was the woman that was brought out in the street in front of the men who were going to stone him for having an adulterous life. And Jesus came there and was kneeling in the sand, was right in the sand. You know, basically, don't judge others because, you know, you do have done the same things, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I judge. So I guess I need to kneel and write and think about what I've done and try to figure out how I can help those.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then in that discussion, remind me, what was the, like, so what did Jesus say to those who had brought the stones? And then what did that end of that conversation look like?
I guess what I take it is, you know, you come as you are, but leave differently. Mm-hmm. You know, your sins are forgiven. Go, sin no more.
Yeah. Yeah. So those who would have sin cast the first stone. That's what he had said to those who you know, threw the woman towards him to see what he would do.
Right.
And then to the woman, he had said, go and sin no more. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so to align with what, thank you, Jeff. Thank you.
I need a blue shirt now.
You need a blue shirt. I'll hook you up later. Blue, gray. Hey, I never said I could get colors right. I just said that we could share some stories today. But no, in alignment with Zane and the crew up there, right? That story about this woman who was drug, right, to Jesus as part of like some cruel test. Like the people that drug her to Jesus really didn't even care about her. They just wanted to try to use her to trap Jesus. And Jesus has this masterful way of accepting, not necessarily condemning, not either condoning, but being full of this like grace and truth that no, we're not, the first issue is no, all of you who brought her here, you cast this first stone. Those of you without sin, you go ahead and you take the first shot. And everybody walks away and leaves, right? And so that's one aspect. And then this other aspect of the conversation. So to this woman, Jesus doesn't send this woman away, but invites her into living in unison or in faithfulness and allegiance to him. And gives her no condemnation, gives her a grace and a forgiveness, but also express at the same time, well, as you go forward, go and do this no more. So an excellent story. Yeah, thank you everybody for sharing today. Hopefully this was a good exercise for you, and hopefully it helped you begin to think through what it looks like to share stories about Jesus. So if you're willing, we're going to sing a closing song together. It's called God of the City, and the song's just a proclamation of prayer, really over our city. And so it doesn't name Bellevue specifically, but this is what we're singing the song over. So if you're willing to stand with us, and we'll sing this closing song together.